Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 146. I'm recording it on Wednesday, July 1st, 2009. The PE10 level today is 16. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong, long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of this selection is Winter Reflections. The title of the podcast is Zvi Bodhi and His Worry-Free Investing Idea. Zvi Bodhi, I hope I'm pronouncing that name properly. I don't know. I've never heard it pronounced. It's spelled Z-V-I, Zvi Bodhi. Has a book, Worry-Free Investing. And I read this book some years ago. I need to reread it. My recollection is at the time I read it, I was interested because Bodhi advocates investing in Treasury inflation-protected securities. And Treasury inflation-protected securities are, next to stocks, my favorite asset class. Stocks and Treasury inflation-protected securities are my two favorites. And for a long time, during the insane bull market years, all we ever heard about was stocks, and other asset classes were denigrated. And there was a time when TIPS were offering just an amazing long-term value proposition, just mouth-watering returns for a super safe asset class like TIPS. And you couldn't get people to listen, to hear the value proposition. And Bodhi is not a newcomer to this. He's not a Johnny-come-lately who, because people are upset about what stocks have done to them, are now turning to TIPS. Bodhi has been advocating TIPS for a long time now, many years. And so he has credibility on this issue. And there are several reasons why I feel he's an important voice, an important voice of balance in the investing realm. One is that he does make a strong argument against stocks. I believe that his argument is somewhat overstated, but it's refreshing to hear somebody saying negative things about stocks, because the debate was just so massively tilted for really all of the 90s and most of the 2000s until the stock crash last fall. And so Bodhi is a courageous voice. His voice is a courageous voice. And he told us some things that we needed to hear at a time we didn't want to hear them. As I say, I don't personally buy into his investing philosophy, but I am very glad that his voice is being heard more than it was heard at earlier times. And he's an advocate of TIPS, which is wonderful. I think TIPS, he has a better appreciation of the benefits of TIPS than a lot of investing experts do. And he has a better appreciation of what risk means in the real world. The risk, investing is all about risk. And the passive investing school, which is the dominant school today, hopefully not for much longer, but the passive investing school gets risk wildly wrong. Wildly, wildly, wildly wrong. Almost all investing questions are at their core risk questions, and passive investing is a model that the understanding of risk there is just totally, I don't know what adjective to use, convoluted, wrongheaded. It's rooted in premises that are false, and the people who develop passive investing are very clever. And so the problem is we have clever rationalizations of false beliefs. Beliefs that don't stand up to scrutiny. Dangerous beliefs. So risk is done poorly in the passive investing model. And Bodhi does have a more sophisticated understanding of risk in the real world. than do the passive investing advocates. So there are a lot of good things that can be said about him. But as I say, I think a lot of people are turning to Bodie. The reason I'm doing a podcast is I've seen several references to him at discussion boards lately. And people are getting interested because people today don't know where to turn. People put their middle-class investors really have no choice. They have to invest for their retirement. They heard many middle-class investors don't want to spend a lot of time researching investing. It's not their favorite thing to do. And they put their trust in the quote-unquote experts, all these people who are put forward in the media as understanding stock investing. And my belief is that our knowledge of stock investing today is primitive. And it's unfortunate that we refer to these people as experts, not that they don't work hard and not that they're not smart, not that they're not good people, but they're not experts. Not if they're advocating passive investing. The passive investing is filled with internal contradictions, and I would not call anyone who advocates passive investing an expert, regardless of how smart he is or how hardworking he is or how you know, kind-hearted he is. If you believe that passive investing can work, you don't understand the ABCs of stock investing, in Rob Bennett's opinion. And I don't mean that as a dig, but I do mean it as a observation, which I think needs to be put forward. And I think we all need to be a little more humble before we start calling ourselves experts or calling others experts. We need to sort of get back to the basics and make sure that we have the fundamentals right and then move forward and try to learn the details of how this stock investing thing works. But until we're willing to go back to the basics and question some fundamental premises, we're going to continue getting ourselves in trouble. So today, a lot of people are having doubts. They say, look, passive investing hasn't worked. I need something better. I need something different. And there's interest in what Bodie's book is called Worry-Free Investing. And so there's interest in what he's saying. But I don't know. There's a part of me that likes it that he's getting increased attention because I say I think he has an important voice and certainly an important counter to the passive investing advocates. But I think if middle-class investors turn to Bodie's approach, I think they're hurting themselves. That's my personal opinion. So I'll give my thoughts on why I think that's so. Both what I think is good in Bodie's vision and what I think is lacking in it. And I am not an expert on Bodie. As I say, I read his book, but my recollection, this was some years ago, a fairly long time ago, and my recollection is that I sort of skimmed it. And it's not that it's not a good book. I think it's a very important book. But at the time I was reading it, I was trying to develop my thinking on valuation-informed indexing. And I turned to Bodie because he was famous for promoting tips. And tips are an important part of the valuation-informed indexing strategy. And as I read his book, though, his ideas were not quite clicking with me. And I was very busy, and I didn't spend as much time as his book merits, and so I'd like to go back and reread it. But I think I understand what Bodie's saying, and so, you know, I want you to know that I haven't studied his ideas in great depth, but I'm going by what I've read in some articles, and I think I understand the basic concept being put forward. I hope so. I believe what Bodie is putting forward, there's an earlier podcast, I don't know the number, but you can find it if you look at the Robcast section of the site. There's an earlier podcast I did called, and it was quite a ways back, called What Your Money or Your Life Taught Me about stock investing. And Your Money or Your Life was a book by Joe Dominguez, which was the greatest influence on my thinking in the saving area. And I believe that what Bodie is arguing for is something very close to what Joe Dominguez would argue for if Joe Dominguez were still with us. Joe Dominguez was burned by stocks and wanted a safer alternative. He viewed stocks as dangerous because he was trying to achieve financial freedom early in life. He was burned by the volatility of stocks, as so many people have been in recent years. And he said, this isn't the way. I'm not going to put my heart and soul into saving money so that I can achieve financial freedom and then lose it all in a stock crash. No. So he turned to a different approach. Now, when Dominguez was around, tips did not exist. So what Dominguez recommended was investing in long-term treasury bonds. That was the closest thing we had to TIPS in those days. But I believe that if Dominguez were alive today, he would be advocating TIPS, as Bodie does. And there's a good logic for that. A lot of the passive investing advocates would mock Dominguez's investing advice, and I always felt that was wrong. Dominguez's investing advice was gravely flawed, in my opinion. But it was wrong to mock it because he came at investing from a different angle than the passive investing advocates, and for perfectly good reasons. And I think the same thing is happening with Bodie. What Bodie advocates is, without going into any great depth, what he advocates generally is investing in TIPS. TIPS are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. And what TIPS give you is a guaranteed return. And, it's inflation protected. So with ordinary bonds, you could do poorly. If you invest in bonds at a certain rate and then inflation goes high, you could get killed. But with inflation protected bonds, you're protected. So TIPS are the safest investing class imaginable, I think. Because they give you a guaranteed return, and they're the return is protected by the U.S. government, guaranteed by the U.S. government, and it's protected from inflation. So I don't think there's any other asset class out there that offers both of those protections. I-bonds is the other. Very similar. I-bonds are very similar to TIPS. They're just different in their tax treatment. So what Bodie is really arguing for, it's true. When he calls it worry-free investing, that's true, in the sense that it's worry-free, in the sense that it's exceptionally stable. And he generally says if you invest in TIPS, what I've read in some articles, he's saying you might get a return of 2% real. Now, there was a day when you could invest in TIPS, 30-year TIPS, and get 4% real. 4.1, I think, is the highest that ever applied. 4.1 real was an extraordinary deal. That was around the top of the bull market when that was available. And if you could get 4.1% on TIPS, a guaranteed return, I think TIPS, in that case, TIPS were challenging stocks as the most exciting investment class. That was an extraordinary situation. But Bodie acknowledges that generally you're not going to get that. You might only get 2%. And I have a big problem with calling a 2% real return worry-free. It's worry-free in the sense that you can count on it if you plan your financial affairs with the expectation of getting 2% real, you will get it, and in that sense, it's worry-free. I don't know, it's shock-free, maybe would be a better word. It's shock-free. You're not going to be shocked by a 50% price loss. But whether it's worry-free or not entirely, I'm not so sure, because if you only get a 2% return, you're greatly diminishing the return you could get from stocks. Stocks provide an average long-term return of over 6% real. So you're cutting your return to a third of what it would be if you were primarily in stocks. That's devastating. I mean, in the long term, because all the reduced return is magnified through the compounding returns phenomenon. So in the long term, you're really losing a lot. So in return for this stability, in return for this safety, you pay a very big price. And that was my objection to Dominguez's recommendation of treasury bonds, and that's my objection to Bodie's recommendation of TIPS. I just don't think that the typical middle-class investor can afford to settle for so low a long-term return. I don't find it acceptable. I think TIPS have a place in every portfolio, and I think that the passive investing advocacy of stocks was dangerous and reckless and foolish and irresponsible. But I don't see Bodie's worry-free investing as being the answer. Now, the root problem with Bodie, as I see it, is it seems to me, and again, I wish that I had studied him in more depth, but if I wait until that happens, I might not record this podcast. It might be another year before I'm able to do that. I have a lot of things on my plate, and I don't want to hold off on the podcast for a year because a lot of people are looking into Bodie's ideas today. So My understanding of what he's saying, it appears to me that Bode agrees with the efficient market theory. What Bode says, when Bode, what Bode really does is he takes, I'm almost inclined to say that he takes passive investing more seriously than the passive investors. That seems like a comical thing to say, but I think there's some truth in that. The passive investors will tell you that stock returns are not predictable. This is why whenever you say, the key message of the passive investors is the timing does not work. That's sort of the motto. Timing doesn't work. That's why they say you should invest passively. They're saying there's no way to know when a good time to invest in stocks is because timing doesn't work. If you believe that timing doesn't work, you're going to be led ultimately to passive investing. Because when you say timing doesn't work, what you're saying is price doesn't matter. Knowing the price that stocks are selling for doesn't make any difference because you can't time. Therefore, you should invest the same amount in stocks at all times. Now, and that's passive investing. That's what I rail against in all of the podcasts here at the site. There's an internal contradiction there. If the passive investors really believed that stock returns are unpredictable, if they really believed that, they would understand that stock investing is just gambling. There's no economic substance to it. It's a gamble. You're rolling dice, and sometimes you get great returns, and sometimes you get horrible returns, but you never know what you're going to get. And this is essentially what Bode argues. What he says is, he takes the passive investing idea, he takes the efficient market theory idea more seriously than the passive investors do. He says, well, it's true. He acknowledges, of course, that stocks sometimes provide great returns. No one that I know of denies that. But he says, well, stocks also sometimes give horrible returns. What happens if you roll the dice and get bad results year after year after year? You'll be wiped out. And he runs Monte Carlo simulations to show this. And what he shows is that even he acknowledges that stocks provide a long-term return of an average long-term return of 6.5 real. This is not under dispute. I acknowledge that, and John Bogle acknowledges that. We're all in accord. Bode and Bogle and Bennett are all in accord. We all have different takes on what that means. What Bogle says is, Bogle contradicts himself. What he says is, you can't predict returns, therefore you can't time the market, therefore you should invest passively. Just always go with the same allocation. However, Bogle also says you can count in the long term on a return of something in the neighborhood of 6.5 real, which is the average return in the U.S. going back a long, long time. Well, if returns are random, as the efficient market theory argues, if returns are unpredictable, if timing doesn't work, Bogle is talking nonsense. You can't count on anything. If returns are random, just a throw of the dice, and the economic realities don't affect it, then stock investing is gambling. And there's no reason whatsoever to feel confident that you'll get a long-term return of 6.5 real. Bogle talks nonsense. I mean no disrespect, but I think that's a fair statement. His statements contradict each other. He's half rational, half passive. And you can't make sense out of it. It's impossible. That's why we've seen so much friction in the first 7 years of our discussions, because when you point out these contradictions, the passive investing advocates have no answer, because the contradictions are very obvious and they go right to the core of the passive investing project. There's no way to make sense out of this. Either stock returns are determined by economic realities, which is what I believe, and they are therefore predictable in the long term, which is what I believe, or they are not determined by economic realities and are therefore totally unpredictable, which means timing doesn't work, but which also means passive investing is gambling. So Bogle says timing doesn't work, but then he pretends that if you invest passively, you're somehow going to get this 6.5 through some magical process that he never explains. Bode is a little more honest about it, in my opinion. Bodie says, well, it's true that you might get 6.5, and you might get a whole lot more than that. If you roll the dice lucky, you're going to do a lot better, but you might get a whole lot less. And there's just no way of knowing, because the market is efficient, and the market is unpredictable, and economic events don't really control prices, and there's just no way of knowing. So what Bodie's essentially saying is we've had bad years in the stock market history, and it's possible you could have one bad year after another, after another, after another. You could have 5, 10 bad years in a row, and if you do, you're going to be left with nothing. So you could have, you know, under Bodie's analysis, you could start investing when you're 25 and have great returns from, say, 25, you know, to 50. 25 years of great returns. And then at 50, have 10 years in a row of 20% losses. And after 10 years of a loss of 20% every year, your portfolio would be just devastated. And all the work of a lifetime goes down the drain. It doesn't mean anything, the fact that you had 25 years of good returns. Might it make you feel good, but it doesn't translate into long-term financial security. Now, if that's true, Bodie is right. If that's true, stock investing is pure gambling, and you're better off in terms of providing for your long-term financial stability investing in tips. I agree. But I don't think he's right. I don't think he's right because I don't believe in the efficient market theory. I believe that Bodie is right. Bodie's half right and Bogle's half right. I believe that stock returns are predictable. See, neither of them is saying that stock returns are predictable. That's what I'm saying. That's what Shiller is saying. That's what John Walter Russell is saying, that stock returns are predictable. And if stock returns are predictable, then you can't go along with passive. If stock returns are predictable, it makes zero sense to invest in stocks when they offer a poor long-term value proposition. So Bogle is out. Passive investing is out. If the return in stocks is in some way connected with the underlying businesses, if there's some sort of connection there, the productivity of the businesses is what ultimately causes the stock price, then stock returns are predictable. And the claim that timing doesn't work is a lie. If returns are connected, if stock returns are the result of economic growth, then stock returns are predictable. And the entire rational investing model is built on that premise. So I reject both Bodie and Bogle, but I agree with Bodie that if the market were as is described by the passive investing advocates, that passive investing would be gambling and you'd be better off in tips. But I also agree with the passive investing advocates that stocks offer a better long-term value proposition than tips in general. And I actually would go farther than that. My personal belief is from the first day, from May 13, 2002, from the first day when we began our discussions in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities about the realities of stock investing, from the first day, I have been criticized for being negative on stock, that I'm a scaredy cat, I'm afraid of risk. And I've always said that's not true. And what I really think is the truth is that I am more pro-stock than Bodie, obviously. But I am also more pro-stock than Bogle. Because what I say is that stocks offer a horrible long-term value proposition where they're insanely overpriced, as they were from 1996 through 2008. And that's how I gained a reputation as being anti-stock, by pointing out the dangers of stock investing when they're selling at insane prices. However, what I say is that it's possible to know in advance when stocks offer a good value proposition and when stocks offer a poor value proposition. So what I say is that if you invest rationally, which means to invest heavily in stocks when they offer a strong long-term value proposition, and to invest lightly in stocks when they offer a poor long-term value proposition, stocks are actually more appealing than the passive investing advocates have ever been able to acknowledge, because they simply don't understand. So I believe that I am properly characterized as the most pro-stock. But being pro-stock doesn't mean deceiving yourselves about the risk of investing and overpriced stocks. Being pro-stock means acknowledging that there are times when the value proposition of stocks is just mouthwatering. There are times when the value proposition of stocks is very strong indeed. And there are times when the value proposition of stocks is very poor, and you're better off in tips. So that's the breakdown. And so I think Bodie adds an important voice. I appreciate his contribution very much. But I believe if you go the Bodie route, what you're doing is you're at least doubling the time it's going to take you to achieve financial freedom, possibly worse than that. Because is it better? An interesting question. Is Bodie's approach better than passive investing or worse? Boy. See, I don't believe that passive investors get the average return. I know they don't, by the historical data. If you ignore price, the passive investors believe, their whole approach is rooted in a belief they're going to end up with 6.5 real. And if they held stocks, they would, at the end of 30 years, get something close to 6.5 real. That's true. But the losses they will suffer will be so devastating that I think it will be a rare passive investor who's going to get anything close to 6.5%. Many passive investors will probably end up with a return somewhere in the neighborhood of 2% or 3%, possibly 4%. And those returns were available from tips. 4% real could have been locked in for 30 years. Under tips. So I think an argument can be made. I'm not a big fan of Bodie's approach, but I think it's every bit as good as passive investing. And it does have less emotional angst attached to it. It's stable and secure. So arguably it's better. Arguably Bodie is a step ahead of the passive investors. I think that can be said. I'm not sure if I would rank it higher. I'd have to think more about that. But I would certainly rank it as high as passive investing. It's more honest. It's very direct and honest and plain and simple and clear. And it is worry-free in the sense that you know what you get what you think you're going to get. Whereas passive investing is all self-deception. It's all word games. And it's dangerous because of that. However, what I like about passive investing is passive investors do at least try to tap into the power of the most appealing investment class of all, stocks. And so I think passive investors, in the end, some of them are going to end up doing better than those following the worry-free investing approach. Some are going to end up doing worse. On the whole, I can't say. I don't feel I can say whether more would end up doing better or more would end up doing worse. There's more emotional angst with passive investing than there would be with worry-free investing. But I think the passive investors might end up with a slightly higher return. That's my not terribly informed tentative take on that question. Now, one of the things that I think to go forward with looking at the pros and cons of the Bodie approach needs to be laid out is the flaws in the conventional advice. And of course, I do this in all the podcasts, but I'll just try to spell out some of the flaws here briefly. But one, the one that I always focus on, the one that gets most of the attention is The passive model totally ignores valuations. So it just says, go with the same stock allocation regardless of the price at which stocks are selling. And that, I think it's fair to say that that's an insane position. It's held by many smart, good people, but it's insane all the same. It's just emotional is what it is. It's emotion trumps human reason. Emotion trumps logic. And so what's happening is many smart people are devoting their intelligence not to understanding stock investing, but to rationalizing an emotional investing approach. So they're plenty smart, but they're doing something that is transparently insane to anyone who is looking at the question objectively. Ignoring price simply makes no sense. The idea of staying with the same stock allocation at all price levels simply makes no sense. So says Rob Bennett. That's the big flaw. But there are others, and Bodie does a good job of fleshing out some of these others. One of the big problems with buy and hold is with passive investing is that there's an assumption, and it's an assumption, not proven, never demonstrated, just assumed, that the passive investor will hold for 30 years. I have never seen anyone try to justify this assumption. Try to point to any record showing that there's been a time when people followed passive investing and actually held for 30 years. I don't know of a single investor who has ever done this. It's 100% theory, 100% assumption. And I think it's a preposterous assumption. If you look at the historical record, what you will see is when stocks have never been to the valuation levels we saw in the 1990s, never in history. We're in totally uncharted waters. But the closest we ever got was 1929. 1929, the P/10 level got to 33. In 1999, it got to 44, far, far higher. But use the 33, let's use the 1929 numbers, since that's the closest we have. The drop in stock prices in the wake of that insane passive investing era in the 20s was 89%. So an 89% price drop. Now, are the passive investors, say that we see the same this time. Nothing worse, even though the valuation levels were far worse, but just the same. Say that ultimately we see an 89% drop from top to bottom. It wouldn't be a permanent 89% drop. That's the worst it ever was, from the highest to the lowest. Say that in another 3 years we have another huge stock crash and the price drop gets to be 89%, going from the top down to where we are in real terms. The 89% drop actually was not real. That was a nominal drop. I believe the real drop was 80%. So say we see 80% in real terms before this is over. 80%. How many passive investors are going to hold after they've lost 80% of their portfolio in real terms? My guess is it's a number very close to zero. So the idea that passive investors are going to end up with 6.5% real after 30 years is preposterous. It's rooted in sand. It's rooted in nothingness. It's an assumption. If they held 30 years, I think they would get something close to that. But there's no reason to believe they're going to. No one's ever done it. So, you know, tell us how wonderful this approach is after you do it. After you're, you know, it's like saying it's a great idea to, cross the Atlantic Ocean in an airplane. You know, yeah, it's a great idea, but you can't just say everyone should go off and do it. Find someone who's done it first and then lived, and then maybe we'll build airplanes, you know, and other, you know, the average person will give it a shot. But get someone to do it first. No one's ever done this thing, this passive investing thing. It's never worked in the real world yet. It's been tried 4 times. It's been a miserable failure every one of the 4 times. Never has it ever worked. So the assumption that it's going to work, in my mind, is wrongheaded in the extreme. The third big risk of the conventional advice is it ignores time periods. See, what they do is there's a lot of word games, and I believe the primary factor here is the stock selling industry is naturally trying to sell stocks. And so they present things to make it sound as though stocks are always a good buy, which, of course, any industry would love you to ignore price. Car selling industry would love it if we ignored price. The book selling industry would love it if we ignored price. You know, every industry would love that. But, of course, it's not in our best interest to do it. Only the stock selling industry has ever convinced millions of people that it's in their best interest to ignore price, not to time the market, as they say. What they do, the word game they engage in is they say, well, stocks will always provide a good return in the long term. They rarely define long term. If you check the records, what you find out is the long term means 30 years. So it's true. If you hold 30 years, passive investing will work. That's true. But what if you are in life circumstances where you need a good return on your money in 20 years, at least a decent return, a return better than a money market, let's say. Can you count on that with stocks? No way, no how. Not according to the historical data. You could be down on money markets. You could have a lower return than money markets at the end of 20 years investing in stocks. That's why passive investing doesn't work. Now, if you follow valuation-informed indexing, that's not going to happen. But passive, it can happen because when stocks are overpriced, as they were, insanely overpriced, as they were from 96 through 2008, the long-term return is dismal. dismal. You can go for years and years and years with a negative return. With valuation-informed indexing, you lower your allocation at such times. Therefore, the hit is not that serious. You suffer a little bit of hit when prices go down, but you recover within a few years. So that within 10 years, you're always doing well. But with not so with passive. With passive, you can be down for 15 years, 20 years, 25 years. You can be down for a long, long, long time. And I seriously question whether the typical middle-class investor can take that kind of hit, that kind of long-lasting hit. So the third big flaw in the conventional advice is it doesn't consider time periods. It's all sort of rooted in word games where we tell ourselves that stocks are always best for the long term, but we don't define long term so that we don't really have to accept that what we're doing is buying an asset class that is likely going to provide a poor result for 20 years. And the fourth big flaw is passive investors take their returns as if they were real. They take them seriously, which is a mistake. The returns in the 1990s were obviously not real. They were all being borrowed from the future. The U.S. economy was generating productivity enough to finance a 6.5% real gain each year, and the passive investors were claiming gains of 20%, 30% a year. So they were borrowing gains from the future, which obviously had to be paid back. But they were counting those returns as if they were real. So what they were doing is they were increasing their spending. They were saying, hey, I stocks were valued at 3x fair value in January 2000. So somebody who had a net worth of $500,000 was pretending that he had a net worth of $1.5 million, which means he was going on vacations more expensive than what he could afford. He was buying cars that he couldn't afford. He was buying houses that he couldn't afford. All these things. And of course, then when the money has to be returned, which is the process we're going through today, that person is in trouble because he's adopted all these spending habits that now he's going to have to change. And he spent years not saving nearly as much as he should have been saving if he had been working with accurate numbers. So that's another huge risk of the conventional / passive investing advice. Now, again, BODY is becoming popular today because people are looking for an alternative. People are seeing that passive doesn't work, and they're saying, what do I do? The mistake, I believe, is that people are saying, well, stock investing means passive investing. Passive doesn't work, so therefore stock investing doesn't work. So they're turning to BODY, which is avoid stocks. I think the more appealing approach is not to blame stocks for what happened. It's not stocks' fault that we invested so recklessly. It's not the fault of stocks. The fault is passive investing. The idea is investing in stocks without regard to price. That's what caused all the trouble. So I recommend not abandoning stocks, but abandoning passive investing. Abandoning the idea that timing doesn't work. Abandoning the idea that price doesn't matter. Do that, and you move to the rational investing model, which is a model of stock investing that works, a model of long-term investing that actually can work in the real world. Now, what it all comes back to ultimately when you're trying to do an analysis is risk. And we've talked before, there's an earlier podcast, I know, Risk in the Real World. We talk about these risk issues. And there are different definitions of risk. And one, the one used by the passive investors, the conventional definition, is that risk is volatility. So the passive investors acknowledge that stocks are risky because stock returns are more volatile. But what they essentially say is you can take on the risky asset class and not pay any price as long as you're willing to invest long term. That's sort of one of their core flaws. They acknowledge the risk with their mouth, but then they wave it away with their hand. It's sort of like it doesn't really count for much. Warren Buffett has, I think, a better definition of risk, which is that risk is the possibility of loss. That's a more common sense definition of risk, and I agree with that. But I do think there's something to the idea that risk is volatility. I don't think that's a crazy idea. I think risk is, I don't know if I've ever defined it exactly right, but it's a mix of these things. And what I've added is to point out that there are different kinds of risk. There's perceived risk and there's actual risk. I think that's the most important insight of the rational school. And perceived risk is what most investors think is risky. So today, for example, the perceived risk of stocks is very high, even though the actual risk is not all that high. In January of 2000, the perceived risk of stocks was de minimis. It was people weren't even, you know, didn't believe there was any risk. And yet the actual risk was extremely high. So the idea with valuation-informed indexing is to distinguish between perceived risk and real risk and invest in stocks heavily when the perceived risk is high and the actual risk is low, because you get paid not for taking on real risk, you get paid for taking on perceived risk. So you want to invest in stocks when you're getting compensated for taking on risk, but when there is not much real risk. But you want to avoid stocks when you get no compensation for risk, which was the case in January of 2000, well, the entire time period from 96 through 2008. The risk was sky high, but the compensation for risk was minimal, or sometimes even negative. You were actually getting penalized for taking on risk. Stocks were providing a lower long-term return than super safe asset classes like TIPS. So for taking on risk, you were being penalized. There was a risk penalty rather than a risk reward, a risk premium. So those are three different approaches to risk, to understanding risk. Now, I ran a guest blog entry this morning at a blog called Mula Nomi, and the guy who writes that, the screen name he uses is Pinyo. And Pinyo asked me a question. The guest blog entry had to do with safe withdrawal rates. It was distinguishing the 4% rule under safe withdrawal rates with the multiply by 25 rule. And Pinyo asked me a question that I thought was a good question, a good illuminating question, one of these basic questions that we need to hear more of, that we don't hear enough of. And he said, well, Rob, what if, and of course the amazing thing is that the impression you got was this is the first time you thought of this, and I don't mean that as a dig at all. A lot of people have never thought of it, but it's the kind of question that we should have all been thinking about for many years now. But he said, Rob, what if I just invest it these people say that the safe withdrawal rate for stocks is 4%, and you disagree. You say it's sometimes 2, sometimes 9, depending on valuations. What if I just invested in super safe asset class, CDs or TIPS or I-bonds? What would my safe withdrawal rate be then? Well, that's a great question, because all retirement planning should be a question of, do you get a better deal from stocks or a better deal from safe asset classes? Because the goal, the thing that the investor has control over is his stock allocation. That's the thing that we control. So that's where all our mental energy should be going, coming up with the right stock allocation. With passive investing, it's impossible to come up with the right stock allocation, because with passive investing, you always have the same allocation. Obviously, that can't always be right. The same allocation can't work at all valuation levels. So the one thing you know with passive is you got it wrong. That you're sure of. You got it wildly wrong. You know that for sure starting out. That's why I call the alternative model rational, because it's irrational to deliberately get your allocation wrong, wildly wrong. So I answered Pinyo's question, and I said, you know what? These old school safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong. They're tilted in favor of stocks, but even though they are tilted, they still are illuminating in that they show a weakness of stocks that most passive investors are not aware of. And what they show is, it's quite remarkable. Assume that the 4% number were right. Assume that stocks really did give a 4% safe withdrawal rate. It's not right, but let's just say it was. That you could retire and count on taking a 4% withdrawal from your portfolio and having that work out. Well, the way the studies are set up is they assume that your portfolio will be reduced to zero over the course of 30 years. That's how they come up with the 4% number. Now, say that you were investing in TIPS paying 0%. TIPS don't pay 0%, but just say. That's the worst I think you can imagine them paying. Say they paid zero. What would the safe withdrawal rate be for TIPS? The answer is it would be 3.3. If you take 3.3 out every year for 30 years, your portfolio would be depleted to zero at the end of 30 years. And that's what the studies are examining. So stocks, they claim generate a 4% safe withdrawal rate. That's not much higher than 3.3. So what they're saying is, for the retiree, stocks are not that much better than an asset class providing a 0% real return. And that's shocking. That's shocking. We all know that stocks have over history provided in the U.S. have provided an average long-term return of 6.5 real. How could it be that an asset class providing a 0% return gives a safe withdrawal rate almost equal to stocks? How could that be? It's shocking. The answer is that is the price of volatility. That is the price of volatility. This is according to the old school studies, not Rob Bennett's new school. This is the old school studies. It's shocking. What's going on is that what determines whether your retirement is going to survive or not is what kind of return you get in the first 10 years. That's one of our most important findings in the retirement planning area, John Walter Russell's research. John's site is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. I mention that site as often as I can because you need to go to John's site to learn what the historical data says. John's research is the engine for the valuation-informed indexing approach and for the rational investing model of stock investing. And one of John's most important findings is the finding that the most important thing in a retirement is the return you get in the first 10 years. If you do well in the first 10 years, your retirement is pretty much a lock. And if you do poorly, the odds are good. You're going to have a busted retirement. It might not happen in 10 years, but somewhere down the road, it's going to go bust. It's going to cripple you. So the problem with stocks is, yes, they do give an average return of 6.5 real. That's true. You see, all of the passive investing ideas are half-truths. So there's truth there. But what they leave out is that stocks are a highly volatile asset class. They don't give 6.5 steady every year. Some years they give 30% gains, and some years they give 50% losses. Well, if you happen to be one of the retirees during one of those years when they give a 50% loss in the first 10 years, all of the 6.5 gains you get in the years after that are not going to be enough to save your retirement. You're going to suffer such a devastating blow that the odds of retirement failure are going to go sky high on your retirement. So this is sort of the point that Bode is making. What Bode is really saying is you can't look at the average return, the 6.5. Bogle, Bennett, Bode all acknowledge that's the average return. But Bode is saying you can't look at that. You've got to look at the worst case scenario if you're trying to plan your financial affairs. Because if you look at the average scenario, you don't know that you're going to get an average scenario. What if you're unlucky? If you're unlucky, all your financial plans of a lifetime go down the drain. And that's just too risky. So Bode is saying that's out of the question. You've got to invest in something more stable. Tips are 100% stable. Now, he's right. I certainly agree you have to invest in something more stable. I just think it's an extreme reaction to go from stock and, you know, from go to passive investing in stocks, which is the most reckless investing strategy imaginable, the Bogle approach. You're going all the way to the other extreme to say I'm going to invest solely in tips. Totally stable asset class. I favor something in the middle, which is, yes, invest primarily in stocks. Why? Because stocks provide a better long-term, it's a stronger engine. It's a 6.5% engine instead of a 2.5% engine. You want that higher return. You're going to be able to retire many years sooner if you invest primarily in stocks. But Bode is right. You can't have that level of volatility. That's just unacceptable. So what the rational model does is it says, okay, what can we do to achieve two goals? One, to invest primarily in stocks, which we have to do to be able to achieve financial freedom in a reasonable amount of time, and also to cut down the volatility to a manageable level, not this insane volatility that the passive investors are stuck with because they ignore price. Well, the answer is pay attention to price. You see, stock market volatility is not random. And that's the mistake that I think both Bogle and Bodie are making. They're just acting as if stock return prices are not predictable. They're just random. They're the market's efficient, and who knows what's going to come up year by year. But that's not so. Not according to common sense and not according to the historical data. What the historical data tells us is when stocks are high priced, you can count on it. You're going to have a huge price crash. It always happens. There are no exceptions in the historical record. You can't say it's going to happen in the next 12 months. That can't be done. Short-term timing doesn't work. But in 10 years, yep, sure can. It's always happened. And common sense says it always must happen. When prices go to insanely dangerous levels, they must return to fair value. And if they're high enough, then there's got to be a crash to get them back to fair value. So stock returns are predictable. Stock returns are not random. And if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to pay attention to price, well, you've reduced the volatility problem by probably 80%. Because all stock crashes come from times of insanely dangerous prices. In fact, if you're willing to not invest passively, if you're willing to invest rationally, change your allocation according to price, stock crashes are a thing of the past for you. You don't have to worry about them. Now, you're going to have temporary drops, to be sure. I tell people today the long-term value proposition is good, but I also tell them I think the odds are strong we're going to see at least a 50% stock crash in the next 5 years. So, you're going to have big drops, but the difference is the 50% price drop we saw last year is a permanent 50% price drop. Because all we were doing there was going from insanely high prices down to fair value. So you're never going to see that money again. But if we see a 50% price drop today from fair value down to half of fair value, which is where we usually go in the aftermath of an insane bull market, that is a price drop that is likely to be temporary. It's a short-term price drop. Because just as high prices must come down, super low prices must come up. So if we go down to a P10 level of 7 or 8 over the next 5 years, we probably will be coming back to a P10 level of 14 or 15 or 16. And you'll get that money back. So if you're going to invest in stocks today, you have to be prepared for a 50% drop. If you're not, you shouldn't be in stocks. But if you're prepared for a 50% drop, you're in pretty good shape. Because in 10 years, you're probably going to have a decent return on your money if you invest in stocks at today's prices. So the rational model avoids the volatility of the passive model, which is Bodie's criticism. But it also avoids the low returns of the Bodie model. It's an in-between model. It's a model where you do take on, it is taking on more risk than Bodie takes on, certainly. Certainly. Even valuation-informed indexing is more risky than TIPS. So I would certainly acknowledge that. But the return is far, far higher. The return is at least 6.5 real. It's actually somewhat in excess of that with valuation-informed indexing. So you get the returns that you would get through passive investing, actually something higher, but with dramatically reduced risk. Risk that's a little higher than the Bodie model, but nothing in the neighborhood of the Bogle model. And I think that's the best choice. I think, you know, it's up, each individual has to decide for himself or herself. If you really can't stand risk at all and you like to be able to count on your returns, Bodie's the way to go. And if you're a gambler and you just, you know, you just got a feeling it's going to be different this time, you should go with passive investing. But if you believe that how stocks have performed in the past is probably somewhat how they're going to perform in the future, I think valuation-informed indexing is the way to go. So, the bottom line on all this is the strategic question. What are you really trying to accomplish with your investing ideas, with your portfolio setup? And what I would say is one of the things we really want to be studying in the future is volatility smoothing. And valuation-informed indexing is an approach to what I'd call volatility smoothing. You see, what passive does is, the dominant model of today, what it does is it looks at Passive was an advance over what we had before. What we had before was a non-reflective approach to investing. It was just sort of, it was short-term timing. It was trying to buy low, sell high, but there was no science to it. What passive was is unfortunately the worst of all worlds. Passive is half science. It uses scientific techniques to analyze stocks, but it allows marketing considerations to be dominant. Whether through intent or otherwise is a different question, but it allows marketing questions to be dominant. And the result is the worst of all worlds, because the scientific element makes it sound good, makes it sound plausible, but the marketing considerations mean that the science part isn't taken terribly seriously. So the numbers are all wrong. So you go into investing thinking that you've been scientific, thinking that you're safe, and in reality, the numbers are all wrong, so you're going to be blindsided. Whereas at least if you were investing in the pre-passive era, you would sometimes have these shocking losses, but you would get out. When you saw things crashing, you'd say, hey, I'm getting out. You know. But the passives don't do that. They stay in and they suffer another crash and then another and another. They have no idea when to get out or when to get in. They don't know what they're doing because they don't pay attention to price. If you don't pay attention to price, you know, they say stay the course. Well, what they're really doing is sailing a boat, you know, without a rudder. I mean, they're just sort of going around in circles. They're deliberately, you know, covering their eyes and putting their fingers in their ears, blocking out information on the most important question, which is price, and going around aimlessly in circles. What valuation-informed indexing aims to do is to address the volatility question, not by avoiding volatility, which is what Bodie does, but by managing volatility, and not by ignoring volatility. See, what Bogle does is ignore volatility. Just pretend it doesn't exist. You know, a wave of the hand does away with it. Don't have to worry about it. Stocks for the long run. Shout some magical incantation. Stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course. Timing doesn't work. Shout these incantations and hope that somehow it'll all be different than it's ever been before, and somehow your investing strategies are going to work out, even though these strategies have a very, very poor track record through history. What Bodie does is, he says, well, we can't ignore volatility. We have to acknowledge that the volatility is a reality, which it is, with stocks. So he says, let's avoid it. Don't ignore it. Avoid it. Get out of stocks. And that, you know, that's a way to avoid it. Valuation-informed indexing says, don't ignore it. That's dangerous. Don't avoid it, because that delays your retirement. Manage it. Manage it. Well, how do you manage volatility? How do you do that? The answer is you manage volatility by adjusting your stock allocation to the different environments that you're going to find yourself in over the course of your investing career. You take that phrase of Bogle, stay the course, and think about what it means to really stay the course. With Bogle, it's just words. He says stay the course, but he stays at the same stock allocation regardless of how risky stocks are. So you're not staying the course. Your risk level is changing dramatically. You start out setting your allocation to have moderate risk, and you end up with insane risk, and you don't do anything about it. How's that staying the course? With valuation-informed indexing, what you do is you say, no. I'm not going to invest passively. I'm going to invest rationally. When stocks become more risky, I am going to stay the course in that I'm going to keep my risk constant. But that means lowering my allocation. I don't care about the allocation number. I don't need to stay the course on the allocation number. That's just a number. What I need to stay the course on is the risk level. So I'll go to whatever allocation I have to go to keep my risk where I wanted it to be, where I know it should be for somebody in my circumstances and with my life goals. So what you're doing is you are smoothing out the volatility. Now, here's how this change from passive to rational affects your mental processes as an investor. say that you were investing passively in 1999, and I don't know what the return was. Let's say it was 20%. It was an insanely high return. The passives were jumping up and down. That's just great. Because they pretend that stock returns are unpredictable. So to them, 20% return is great because the fact that they got a 20% return in 99 doesn't mean they're going to have to pay it back in 2008. So they're saying, hey, I got 20% return. I can put that in the bank. That's real. I can start spending more. I have more money. I'm ahead of my goals. Doing good. So what they're doing is they're falling right into the volatility trap. They're allowing their emotions to go sky high in response to a totally phony event. All that happens when we have a 20% return. If investing were rational, the return would obviously reflect the economic growth. And the economic growth, as we know, has been enough to support a 6.5 real return for decades and decades and decades. So when you get 6.5 real, you should be jumping up and down. You got what you're supposed to get. But when you get 20, you're obviously not getting what you're supposed to get. You're getting, 24% more than what's appropriate. You're getting unrealistic returns. So what do you do? You don't have the power as an individual investor to change that. You can't say, hey, teacher, I don't like 20%. I want it to be 6%. Please fix. Nothing you can do. Well, what you can do is you can change your allocation. So what you're trying to do as a valuation-informed indexer is to earn 6.5% every year. That's your goal. To smooth out the volatility so that you're not getting 2% a year like Bodie's getting in tips, which are, a stable asset class, but a not terribly high return asset class. And you're not sometimes getting 30% and sometimes getting negative 50 like the passives. What you want is stable 6.5. But you don't. If I had the power to wave a magic wand and make the return always 6.5, I'd do it. But there's nothing I can do. I can't affect. If people are going to invest irrationally and drive the price up 20% in 1999, there's not a thing I can do about it. Well, there is a thing I can do. I can't change the return, but I can change my level of participation in the return. You see? What I can do is I can say that 20% return is crazy. And the current price level of stocks at 3x fair value is crazy. And therefore, this is an asset class that today doesn't offer much in the way of long-term prospects. So I am pulling back to a 10% stock allocation or 20% allocation. I'm putting my money in tips, like Bodie says, for now. But the difference with Bodie is you're not going to stay. You're not going to stay in tips because you get back to fair price like we are today, and you say, well, now the long term return is 5% real or 6% real, and that's better than tips. And so now I'm going to start shifting back into stocks. So it's a middle ground. It's not the extreme conservative position of Bodie, and it's not the extreme reckless position of Bogle. It's a middle ground, and the rest of the stock selling industry, not just Bogle. All the stock selling industry wants us to ignore price because they're in the stock selling industry. What would you expect them to do? We need somebody speaking up for the middle class investor as Bodie does, but I think we need somebody acknowledging that the returns offered in stocks truly are appealing. And it's an extreme emotional reaction, in Rob Bennett's opinion, to go solely to tips, as Bodie recommends. Now, one last point I want to make before signing off is something, how can I put this? There was a thread I liked at bogleheads.org the other day. I forget the title, and I might link to it at Today's Passion. I haven't done it yet, but I might. But the title was along the lines of, have we disparaged cash? And see, that's what happens in a huge stock, in a huge bull market. Cash-like asset classes and tips, I think of tips as super cash. It's not exactly cash like a money market. It's better than a money market, but it's as safe as cash. So it has all the safety of cash, but higher returns and inflation protection. So it's sort of a super cash. And that's, of course, why Bodhi loves it and why I think Dominguez would love it. It was good to see the Bogleheads acknowledging that they have disparaged cash. Not everybody did, but at least the person who started the thread did. So that's a good sign. But one of the points I would make, that again, I think it's a middle ground between Bogle and Bodhi. Bogle would say you should always be primarily in stocks. Stocks offer the better long-term value proposition. You know, this idea that the more risk you take on, the better return you're going to get. Not really true. Depends on whether that risk is real or perceived. But Bogle would generally, and others in the stock selling industry, would generally say you're better to be heavily in stocks. Because stocks, you know, they quote that 6.5 real return. They say the return's better. Bodhi says no, you're better off in tips, even if they're only paying 2% real. What Bennett says is, we have disparaged the cash-like. We have disparaged super cash. What we should be looking, we should not compare, I say, we should not compare the returns in tips with the returns in stocks directly. Why? Because the return from tips is a non-volatile return. And there's a huge advantage in a non-volatile return. That's a huge benefit. So you can't compare the returns directly. In January of 2000, tips were paying something in the neighborhood of 4% real. Stocks were paying negative 1% real long term at those prices. So tips were obviously better by 5 full percentage points. But say the passives were right and returns were not predictable and stocks were paying at the time 6.5 real. There's no way to predict returns, and you might as well just assume that stocks pay their average return 6.5. The passive approach. Even under those circumstances, I would argue tips were comparable to stocks. Why? Because tips were so much less volatile. So much less volatile. And you should be compensated as an investor for accepting volatility. You shouldn't. If two asset classes offer the same return and one is more volatile, you should always choose the less volatile asset class. So my rule of thumb is stocks need to offer at least 2% real higher return than tips to make stocks a worthwhile asset class for me. Now, maybe that should be 3%. Maybe I'm being too conservative. I don't know. That's up for debate. The rule I use is 2%. I haven't thought that through, you know, well enough to say for sure. I think it's a reasonable rule of thumb. So when stocks are providing 6.5 real and tips are providing 4, the 2% rule is met. Stocks are 2.5 higher, but it's close. So you can make a reasonable argument that tips are better. Now, in January of 2000, stocks were negative 1, tips were positive 4. There's a 5% differential. Add in the 2% differential for reduced volatility, and you've got a 7% differential for tips. You see? Tips just trounced stocks. If you make, in the course of your investing lifetime, if you had chosen tips in January of 2000, when the differential was 7 full percentage points of return per year, not one time, every year, for 10 years running, 7% differential, you're going to end up retiring many years sooner than would have otherwise been possible. That's what valuation-informed indexing is all about. It's about comparing. It's always about comparing. It's always about comparing stocks, usually with tips, but we could compare stocks with I-bonds or CDs, some safe asset class. And what you want to find out is the risk of stocks justified for you or not? There is no one answer. But what we're trying to move toward is a way of understanding how to examine the question properly. And one of the things you just have to look at is volatility. Because if all you're looking at is return, then you're ignoring this question of whether you're going to get thrown off the horse or not. Because when you go for the high return asset class, there are going to be times when you get thrown off the horse. Because you can't take that volatility. It's just too much. What you're aiming for as a valuation-informed indexer is smoothed-out volatility. And so one of the things I recommend is when stocks go up by, insane amounts like they did in the late 90s, I recommend keeping a second set of books. Don't even count that return as your return. Reduce it. If the price of stocks is 3 times fair value, take your portfolio, your stock portfolio number, and cut 2/3 off of it. And then you know what you really earn, how much wealth you really control in that stock portfolio. And then when you get the inevitable price crash like we experienced in 2008, it's not going to bother you. All that's going to happen is your stocks are just going to go back to what's on your books as what you had in the first place. So no muss, no fuss, no pain, no problem. Do you see? That's what valuation-informed indexing is all about. And of course, if you mark it down in that way, you're not going to feel this emotional pull to invest in stocks at times of insanely high prices. You're going to say, wait a minute, the stock portfolio I have to mark way down. If I were invested in TIPS, I wouldn't have to mark it down. Why not just go with TIPS? And you would make rational choices. But the problem with passive is stock markets are highly emotional. And what passive is saying is whatever Mr. Market does, he's an insane manic depressive. Whatever he does, you middle class investor have to do. Just go with the market. The market knows best. So what if the market's a manic depressive and he's jumping out the window? That's what you should do too. So what if he's a manic depressive and he's high on drugs? You need to get high on drugs, middle class investor. And I'm saying no. Middle class investors need to be sober investors. I don't think we need to go to as far as Bodie is going and eliminate all risk. You know, that's like saying not only am I not going to be a drug addict, I'm never going to ask a girl to dance. You know, I'm just going to stay in my room. So I won't get hurt. You've got to put your heart out there. You got to take some chances. But you want to take calculated risk. You don't want to take the insane risk that the passive investors take. That's Rob Bennett's take. Bodie is a voice of courage and a voice of some wisdom, adding some insights that we need to hear. But I think an excessively conservative voice, for my taste. I take a middle ground between the Bogle reckless approach. I should call it the stock selling industry approach. Bogle's name's associated with it, but it's all the stock selling industry promotes it. And Bodie, who does take middle class needs into account, but in my view, does so a bit excessively, because he buys into the efficient market theory. And I think the healthy middle ground, the healthy emotional middle ground, is acknowledging that price matters with stocks as it does with everything else, cutting back on your stock allocation at times of insane overvaluation, and going with a heavier stock allocation at times when valuations are low and the long-term value proposition for stocks is truly mouthwatering. And knowing to reduce your portfolio number at times of insane overpricing, and thereby to smooth out the volatility that you experience. You can't change the volatility of Mr. Market. You can't affect that. But you can affect your portfolio. You can keep your portfolio sane when all the rest are going stock drunk. That's the idea of the investing approach explored at PassionSaving.com. Please send me your emails if you have feedback. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.